Welcome to the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. I'm your host, Lee Van Osman. By the time you're hearing this podcast, I'll be in New York for the NBA draft covering top Canadian prospect Will Riley, where the Raptors might pick in this draft if they still keep their pick. By the time you're hearing this, who knows? We'll find out. I wanted to go through the Raptors' options at number 9 and give you insight on the Canadians in the draft. Not only Will Riley, but Ryan Nemhard, maybe Montreal's own Jamil Telfer, another fringe NBA guy. Three Canadians all in the mix. And joining me to do so is someone I really respect in the draft space. I listen to his podcast religiously. I go to sleep to it, to be honest with you. I won't lie. Draft consultant and a member of the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, my brother James Barlow. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Hopefully you're not sleeping on this because it'll be boring.
No. Hey, it's a good listen, man. Right before I go to sleep, like, I'd be up late, though, so I'd be listening, like, around, like, 1, 2 a.m. sometimes, okay. You know? But I really enjoy it, though, man. Like, all year long, listening to the just everything draft-related, I feel like you guys do a really good job. I know you were just, like, you've been added to the mix in the last year. I'm like, you and your brother, when you guys go back and forth, I really enjoy it. So I wanted to get your expertise. But you're telling me before we start recording, you're going to be in the draft in New York.
Yes.
Any food spots you're looking to hit?
Where did I eat at last time? I was in Brooklyn for the McDonald's All-American games.
Yeah.
I just go to the bodegas, man. Like, yeah. Anything that didn't have a chain, I go. Okay. And then I ate in Harlem at the, what's the longest owned black restaurant? I forget the name.
I don't know. I'd be going for chicken parm every single time I'm in New York.
Chicken parm?
Chicken parm. There's a few spots. There's one like on near Times Square. I'll be honest, if you're getting the names, they all sound the same, you know? So
yeah. No, I went to, it's like historic. So I went out there and ate some like chicken and waffles. That was really good. But I just wanted to hear the train tracks and, you know, get the full city. New York experience.
Yeah. What are you most looking forward to on draft night? It's going to be your first draft?
Yeah, this is my first draft in person. I'm looking forward to just the dominoes falling. Like, we know Cooper Flagg is going number one. We assume Dylan Harper's going number two. And then, like, I think it's going to be chaos, to be honest with you. And that's what I'm looking forward to. Like, it's exciting / I want to get it over with, you know, because, like, let's get it going. And at the same time, like, I just imagine – this being my first time seeing it in real time, I just imagine it's going to be crazy as far as, like, the trades because, you know, the NBA today is not what it used to be 5 years ago. Like, you know, yeah. You're on the clock. Teams are rebuilding. Teams giving up draft picks like crazy. I mean, Luka Doncic got traded. I still don't believe that, but yeah. He got traded. So, basically, anything is possible.
Anything's possible, man. I want to get your thoughts. Obviously, we're going to talk Raptors in depth. But Ace Bailey. A lot of talk. We're recording this obviously a few days before the draft. What are your thoughts on him refusing to work out in Philly? And kind of just the way, I don't know. I honestly have thoughts on it, but I want to get your thoughts on just seeing all the news that came out about his agency and all that kind of stuff.
So I understand both sides of like the coin. You know, like if I'm 18, I want to get as many opportunities that I can to make mistakes, to play through mistakes. I understand that I'm going to be playing X amount of minutes a game. I get that. But then also, I'm not 18. So I'm a grown man. I understand that, you know, you can be in a position like Philadelphia and treat it like a basketball internship and get better. You playing alongside, you know, Paul George, who Ace Bailey said he, you know, mimics his game after, or one of his favorite players. You know, you're learning how to win because Philly has to win. They got way too much money allocated to guys. And at the same time, it's like, you know, I feel like there could be 24 to 30 minutes a night for Ace Bailey if he, you know, buys in. And by the time that by the time you're up for, you know, your second contract, I think Paul George is like off the book. So everything could still work out. And personally, I don't feel like he's the one. I don't feel like he's polished enough to do that as far as like the move of, you know, turning workouts down. Because if you look at it, like Cooper Flagg's situation is, They're not giving him the keys. He's going to have to fit in too. Like he's playing Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And when Kyrie comes back, we know what Kyrie's going to do. So, and then like Dylan Harper, assuming he stays in San Antonio, like he's playing alongside two other guys who need the ball in their hands on top of Ben Wembanyama. So it's like, again, I get it. You know, as an agent standpoint, you want your client to be in the best position to win financially, win individually, your own goals. But at the same time, I think that just because you're in that situation, it's not a guarantee of everything is going to work out. So, excuse me, for example, like Cam Thomas averaged 25. You know, we know he's going to get you 20 every single night. But guess what? He's a restricted free agent this year. So it's like it's no guarantee. But again, I understand both sides of it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's very interesting for me. I just don't see. I know you guys had this debate a few podcasts ago about who should Philly select. I just don't see Ace a good fit just because of I know Nick Nurse very well here in Toronto. That's not the type of player he likes to, especially with all this drama that's been going on and refusing workouts. And I feel like Ace should go to a spot where I feel like the ball's in his hands, you know, like go be the guy, that kind of stuff, right? Where, but then also refusing Utah, which I feel like will be a perfect situation. I'm like,
yeah, I mean, Utah, come on now. They're starving for you.
They're starving for a star.
They've been tanking, it feels like forever. So, but you don't want to work out there. I mean, I don't know, man. We'll see what happens. I feel like, though, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, OG was young on that championship team.
Yeah, he didn't even play in that championship year. He was injured.
He was injured. Okay. Yeah, he did get hurt. Yeah. But, like, he leaned on, and he was older, but Nurse leaned on Fred VanVleet, got Fred paid, you know. OG did, you know, he earned his reps. And again, I'm not saying they're the same caliber player, but OG earned his reps. And now OG's dumb rich in New York. And then if you look back to like, all right, Kawhi Leonard, what was his role getting drafted by the Spurs? You know what I'm saying? Do the dirty work. He's rich. He owns half of LA, it feels like, you know? So it's like it could work out if you, you know, do it right. But I don't know, man. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Let's get to some Raptors talk. The Raptors are obviously sitting at the 9th pick right now. By the time this recording, they could have traded it. I don't know. So much rumors, man. A lot of it, I'm like, I don't believe because some of the packages don't really make sense. How would you describe, as a guy that follows the draft so closely, the tier of players that are available around the range where the Raptors are drafting at number 9?
So, you know, if you look at tonight's game, you know, this is Thursday, like the two best players for Oklahoma City were drafted, what, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th? They weren't top 5 picks. Mm-hmm. So you kind of never know what you're going to get. In a sense, at the 9th pick, I feel like you can get a quality starter. Maybe, just maybe, if Noah Asenge is more than an energy guy, let's see what he turns out to be. But I feel like, you know, or maybe if Kyle Malawach is there, maybe he's more than just a run and dunk big. Maybe he has more game. You know, in scouting him, he played in the Basketball Africa League, and it wasn't just running and dunking. He was getting the ball in the post. He shot a lot of turnaround jumpers. Yeah. He showed you he could move outside on the perimeter defending. So maybe there's those two guys who are there. They strike me to be if they're available, or even a Derek Queen. I don't know. Let's say those three guys, I feel like they may be able to be more than complementary players if things work out. Or if I were to project somebody outside of the top 5 who I think that the Raptors could take that could return more than just, you know, role player, rotation guy, it would be one of those three.
I want to ask you, kind of going through the names you just mentioned, Malawach, obviously on a Duke, a stacked team, especially featuring guys like Cooper Flagg, Colin Knipple, Tyrese Proctor, Zion James. We got a lot of guys that the man touches on that team. And I feel like his role was kind of reduced to this rim running, blocking shots, protecting the rim. Do you feel like there's more to his game to just that? Or do you feel like you see that role being what he is in the NBA?
Initially, that's probably what his role is going to be. But again, depending on the situation, you can grow into it. If Brooklyn takes him, they're going to give him more opportunities to do something besides, you know, run and dunk because they're in complete rebuild mode. Whereas, you know, your Raptors, guys got a lot of bread, you know, allocated to guys. So we might need you to just run and dunk until we figure things out. But I do think he does. He has the potential to do more. He has good touch. The free throw percentage for, you know, a big of his size, like, it indicates that he does have the ability to stretch the floor. And he did play for the South Sudan national team in the Olympics. Like, he hit a few jumpers. He hit some threes. And like I said, if you could, you know, listeners, if you go to YouTube and you search, you know, his Basketball Africa League, it's more than just running dunking. So, you know, I think his immediate impact is run, dunk, defend. But I do think that there is a chance he has a little bit more game than that. Would it be somebody that you just feature on the block like a Jokic or an Embiid? I don't think so. But, you know, to switch it up, I think he has that ability to do more.
Do you think he's still there at 9 when the Raptors are picking? If you had to guess right now.
So I think it comes down to where Charlotte does. And, you know, the whispers are Charlotte really likes VJ Edgecombe. They really like Con Knipple. I don't know what they're going to do with Mark Williams because they tried to trade that man.
That man gone. He gone soon.
You can't break up with somebody and then they still sleep on the couch. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Yusuf Nurkic is, you know, he's older. So, but at the same time, the Hornets have 2 picks in the 30s. Maybe they package those to move up, take another one. There's a lot of bigs in this draft. So maybe they get their big a little later. My philosophy of scouting is, like, I feel like the run and dunk guys, you can kind of get them at various, like, stages in the draft. Like, they're available. But I do think that there is an opportunity for my watch to be there at 9.
Interesting. Okay. Because obviously a lot of people link him to the Raptors, right? Because the Basketball Without Borders connection, playing, like, Giants of Africa. I think, I don't know if he played Giants, but he's Ball League, obviously, that kind of stuff, right? So it'll be interesting. See if he's there and if the Raptors end up taking him, if he is there at 9. But is there a name or two that you think, like, just screams, like, this is a Raptors pick?
I really think Noah Singa is a Raptors pick.
Yeah.
Now, you know, depending on who you ask and, you know, you look at that balance sheet, you might need somebody who's going to contribute right away. And at the same time, you know, you are wing heavy already in Toronto, but he is a Raptors pick because I feel like, and I don't know, man, this might be a big statement, but there is some, like, Pascal Siakam type stuff going on there.
I made that comp too when somebody asked me.
Okay, so I'm not tripping. So there is some, like,
early stages, right? Like, running down
early the floor. He's effective and he's still raw, you know? And if you're thinking long term, like, you know, there's the RJ Barrett trade rumors, obviously. There's the, I've seen, you know, quickly trade rumors because he's making so much money. But if you find yourself in a situation where it's like, okay, maybe the timeline isn't what we think it is. We got some years to develop. I really like Asenge there. And I know you got a bunch of forwards, but he might be, I mean, he's 18. He's super productive. He plays hard. He's still growing. And he's a play finisher right now, but he can grab a rebound and push. And, like, you know, I've met his agent. And his agent said he is at his worst he's ever going to be. Like, the kid is special.
Interesting. And my problem with Noah is obviously like you said, I think it'll take time, right? Development wise, the Raptors are gonna have to, like, they have Aurish Shamshe, who's still, like, 2 years away from 2 years away. But thinking about that situation, I'm thinking about where the Raptors are as an organization. Masai's contract is up in 2026, and obviously we see them in every single rumor right now. It makes me think personally that they're on the clock, that they need to show some progress since the last championship, since they drafted Scottie Barnes, and that they might not have time to draft a prospect like this. So my question is, like, do you see him being able to contribute maybe right away in the league, or do you see this guy, like, spending a lot of time in the G League in his first year?
See, I think he can contribute right away because you don't have to run plays for him. And while he's not a shooter right now, like, at all, you got Mogbo, right?
Yeah.
And he is similar to Mogbo, but he's, like, 4 years younger in a sense that, like, if you just put him out there, it's going to be plus basketball. So it's like he's a ways away from who he is going to be. But at the same time, I still feel like his motor, his talent, his skill level will, you know, allow him to contribute. Because, again, he's going to rebound. He's going to finish plays. He tries to dunk He's 190, and he's trying to dunk every single time he can get the ball. Now, he's not a super high flyer, but, like, that level of toughness is there for him. So I really like him a lot.
Yeah, I think he's, like, 3 days younger than Cooper. Will be still 18 in the end of December when the NBA season starts. So, hey, man, Noah Singe, I feel like I can see it. Raptors type of build, they love these, like, 6'9", long. Six, I think he's, like, 6. He might have measured higher than that.
I think he was 6'10", barefoot.
So. Hey, man.
And he can move. So, I mean, if you look at it like from the standpoint of, you know, let's get as many 6'8", 6'9" guys that can move as possible, I mean, you'll absolutely take it. So,
yeah. Obviously, we were talking about Ace, guys that are sliding in the draft. I don't think Ace is going to fall that far to 9. But I'm also a huge fan of, like, guys like Jeremiah Fears, potentially. And then say Ace does fall, right? And the Pelicans end up picking him. Do you think, I don't know, I'm not asking you, like, about Fears. Any other names you see kind of in that maybe 7-8 to, like, the clear-cut guys that are like, okay, this is the 7, this is the 8. Could you see them falling to 9?
I don't understand it, but same time, I'm not charged. Some people may think Derek Queen is going to fall. Okay. I don't think Fears is going to fall. For everything that I heard, people love him. Like, I've been a fan of his from the jump. So I've had him mocked in my top 7 all year. Like, from the time he destroyed Arizona, you know, I got on the podcast with my brother, and I was like, yo, that kid's a top 5 pick. Like, his game just screams, like, NBA potential, you know, star.
Now, talking about Fears, right?
Yeah, Jeremiah Fears.
I think you were one of the first people on him when I remember hearing about Fears. So,
I mean, you know, I don't want too much more, man, but you said it, not me.
I'll give you a credit. Yeah.
But if there is somebody that could fall, like, let's say, for example, if Ace falls, that means probably, like, Con Knipple moves up. So, and then I think on the clock would be, I don't think Trey Johnson makes it past Utah. That doesn't make sense for them to, you know, pass on him. So then at 6, that's where it gets interesting. I think Washington likes Fears. I think that they like Ace too. But I think Derrick Queen really, really fits what they're trying to do. So you have a choice between those 3 guys. And then it's like, from there, what do you do? The Pelicans probably takes whoever is available between Ace and Fears, because the Pelicans don't need another center. They drafted Eve Missy, and they still got Zion too. That's another big. So then at 8, it's like, okay, what does Brooklyn do? So now, if Queen is there at 9, I like Queen in Toronto. And I was on another, you know, Raptors-based podcast, and I was like, hear me out. I know he's not going to block a lot of shots, but if you get the wings to buy in, and they all have the talent to defend, or they have the ability to defend, they have the physical tools. I know Ingram wasn't the best defender in New Orleans, but he's 6'8", and he's long, right? We know Scotty. He's got all the tools to be a defender. If you keep RJ Barrett, he's got the physical tools, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with quickly. But at the same time, like, you know, if you buy in, you buy in. And I feel like you can mirror what the Houston Rockets did. The Houston Rockets, like, on paper, their best defensive rating advanced numbers guy was like Sengun in the playoffs. And he didn't block a single shot, I don't think. And they played double big lineups on top of that too. So it's like, it would take a collective buying in, but, like, offensively, I think that gives you a totally different dynamic with Queen there, because he can grab rebounds and he can create offense from there. And it's almost like you got, you know, a, you know, store brand Jokic. So now you got between Queen, Barrett, Ingram, and Barnes, you got 5 guys that can grab the ball off the glass and create offense.
Yeah.
And then if you run a dribble handoff with Queen, we know he's going to win any switch, because that dude is absolutely hard to guard. He's just really, really skilled. But, you know, maybe that's just me in 2K, you know, manager mode, where, you know, stuff is, you know, pie in the sky. But I think that situation could work. It would just take a whole lot of buying in on defense.
Yeah, that's my issue. The defense is like, because when I look at the Raptors situation, I'm like, it's a bunch of, like, outside of Scotty, outside of maybe Yak, a bunch of, like, average at best defenders in the starting group. Quickly, RJ's not that great defensively. Grady Dick, Jacoby Walters, obviously improve. I think he's a solid defender. But I think it's too much pressure on Scotty. But I'll say is I think he's the best passer in this class, at least that queen, at least in like this range. You could maybe say Wolf might be up there. I feel for him, at least for bigs I'm talking about. And vibes-wise, I'll tell you this. I actually asked him a question at the combine, and he's funny. I'll give you that. I'll give him that because. But the thing too is, I asked him like, "What do you know about Toronto? What do you know about the city?" He's like, "I heard the taxes are bad." So right away, I'm like, "This guy, like, he would fit into what the Raptors culture is building, like just like the chemistry, like these young cats that are like coming up together, like the Jamal Sheds and Jacoby Walters, that kind of. I feel like he'd fit perfectly in that group." And I know Masai, I think, went up to him at the lottery, just said what up to him. So Masai knows him pretty well. So
I'm a huge fan of his, and I get the concerns, but it's like if you dig in and like watch his film, like, you know, he does little sneaky stuff. Like you try to post him, he'll pull the chair. Yeah. Or, you know, he's got really good hands in space. I think he's going to be really good. I think people are kind of overthinking it because he's on a little chubby side and he wears a long sleeve shirt and the mouthpiece is out. But like, as far as, you know, a basketball player, I think he's as offensively talented as anybody. And like, I would, you know, tell people like, don't pay attention to his combine numbers. Like that dude is, he's a basketball player. He's not a combine guy.
I was about to say those combine numbers looked.
Oh, they were terrible.
I was watching it in person. I was telling somebody this and I was trying to get a recording of him shooting.
Yeah, and I was like, he missed a bunch of shots. You were sitting next to me.
I was like, I can't record this because I don't want to make the brother look bad, you know? Because I was like, I can't put this out there. But my question is, the shooting we're talking about, he has good touch close to the rim. Free throws, I think he was shooting like around 76-77%. Do you think like the shooting could be something that he adds? The mechanics kind of look kind of, I don't know, in person, and watching on TV, I'd be like, hey, it doesn't look bad. But then watching up close, I'm like, it's kind of funky in a way. What are your thoughts on just the shooting potential? Is it there?
I think it's there. And I think like the last 5-6 games of the season, he started to shoot more threes. He strikes me as a dude is like, you know, I don't need to shoot these threes. Like these dudes can't guard me. And for, you know, college basketball is kind of weird. They were like guarding him on the perimeter. And he's so skilled that he was, you know, like blowing by guys, getting dunks at, you know, 6'10", 250, which sounds crazy.
Right.
Seeing him in person shoot, his jumper was really, really flat. he was shooting a lot of bricks.
Yeah.
But I just don't think he took the combine seriously because, like, I just don't think that's not his atmosphere. I think, but also at the same time, you know, workout video is a workout video, but somebody in his camp just dropped a workout video and he was knocking down threes.
Okay.
I think the potential is there.
I love the propaganda.
Yeah. You got to put the propaganda out this time, man. Have to.
Yeah, like you mentioned, at the end of this, I think in the tournament, he was shooting the ball pretty well, like around end of March.
He hit 2-1 game.
Yeah, but then you look at, I don't think he hit his first three until December against Purdue, hit two of that, and then doesn't hit a three again until the end of March against Michigan. I'm like, or Michigan State, one of those two teams. And I'm like, damn. So like, but then, like you said, in a game, in the tournament, teams are leaving him wide open. He's like, I don't care, I'll shoot it, despite not shooting at all
that was
season.
Against Florida.
Yeah.
And that's the money time, you know? Yeah. So I'm just buying his talent. Like that shot he hit against Colorado State, that's the shot that an 8-year veteran takes and makes, that particular move in general. So,
and I love the mentality. Give me the ball.
Like, what are we doing? What player are you drawing up? Give me the ball. Yeah. And you saw where he caught the ball at. That's at the top of the key.
Yeah,
that wasn't like give me a ball on the block. He can score on the block, but I just feel like he's so talented offensively and is a very good passer. I think, like, you know, you have to sit. It would take a collective team buying in if we're going to lock in on defense. And a part of me thinks that, you know, they wouldn't do it. But at the same time, like, look at the Rockets. Jalen Green was never known as a defender. He was on the floor a lot, played a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
Yes, you have Amen Thompson. Yes, you have Dylan Brooks. Yes, Fred defends. But, like, those young guys had to buy in because, you know, that's what the coach demanded. So I think it's possible. Will you get the guys to do it is, you know, always another story.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was kind of iffy on Queen. I feel like you kind of sold me on him.
Man, you're like the second or third person that I was, man.
I'll be honest. The shooting kind of scared me, to be honest. So, and then the buy-in, when you're talking about the buy-in, I think with the way the Raptors are going under Darko, I think they could get that buy-in, especially from the young guys. So keep in mind, I think that's a good point to think about. I want to ask you about maybe six players kind of in the Raptors range. I want to get your ranking on these guys. Derrick Queen, Kamal Maluach, Carter Bryant, who's, shout out to his agency, the Propaganda. I don't know where the hell he came up.
AC had his shirt buttoned all the way to the top at the combine. Hey. And that's the hey.
So, yeah, Derrick Queen, Kamal Maluach, Carter Bryant, Noah Singe, Kasperis Yakachonis, who I've watched quite a bit, quite a lot because of Will Riley. Those six guys, can you give me your ranking on those six for the Raptors pick?
For the Raptors pick at 9. If those guys are available, I'm still going to ride with Queen. So I'm going to go Queen, Singe, Maluach. You said 6 guys or 5?
6 guys. Carter Bryant and Kasperis left.
So you said Queen. I'm going to put
Carter Bryant
4
last. On
okay.
There. And I put Kasperis up because I do think I'm not as high on Yakachonis as a lead guard, but in that situation in Toronto, it worked because you got other ball handlers. If he's my only ball handler, I feel like I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, especially watching.
He's like, you know, my half-court ball handler, get guys set up. I do think he'll be a better shooter, then I'm okay with that. Yeah. But I guess to get to the meat of that, I'm a little lower on Carter Bryant.
Tell me.
So here's the thing about him. I think 80% of his shots are assisted, right? So ultimately, again, I get it. The defense, I get the measurements. Measurements are important, but it's basketball, not bodybuilding, right? Like, we've seen guys yoked up out of this world, and you just yoked up. It is, I mean, you know.
Muscles for nothing.
Muscles for nothing, you know? That's from, I forgot what movie that was.
I forget.
From. Malibu Most Wanted, man. What you got all those muscles for nothing? And I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just a little lower on, you know. So, for example, let me tell you why. He's got the reputation of a defender. I believe he did a good job on Trey Johnson. And that bodes extremely well. Trey Johnson led the SEC in scoring. But I saw him have an opportunity to guard Cooper Flagg. Cooper Flagg got everything he wanted, when he wanted, how he wanted on him. And, you know, whoever's listening can be like, oh, man, that's Cooper Flagg. He's the number one pick. I get it. But, you know, we're talking about rising to the competition. And in that first half, it was, I think he had 4 buckets on Carter Bryant. Second half, it was like, okay, you tried to adjust. Now I'm going to show you I can make plays. So he was beating him off the dribble, forced the help. He found Maluach on like two or three lobs. Like, he got what he wanted. And, again, that's Cooper Flagg, so maybe we'll give him a pass for that. And then, but, you know, as a film watcher, studier that I try to be, like, I get on Synergy, and I believe, like, in pick and roll, teams shot, like, 45% on him in pick and roll. And you watch his pick and roll tape, it's like he's not engaged with all those muscles, all that athleticism, all that length. He's giving guys a gap. Maybe that's what the coach told him to do. But when you give guys a gap, you allow yourself to get screened. So he gets screened a lot. I saw him play BYU. Yegor Demon was getting to the basket on him. Like, why are you not crowding Yegor Demon, who I think has an average handle and who definitely doesn't even want to go to the basket because, you know, I don't think he's the most assertive person. And it was like 2 or 3 drives where he got beat by Yegor Demon. So, and it's not necessarily a knock on Carter Bryant. I hope his people don't come looking for me. But I just don't understand there's this huge gap between him and Drake Powell, right? Mm-hmm. When you watch Drake Powell's defensive film, he's crowding guys. His defensive intensity looks like what we about to see in the next hour with Oklahoma City. He's pressuring guys out the half court. You know, he's got a massive wingspan too, but he's using it. He's not dying on screens. He's got active hands in the pick and roll. So then somebody could be like, well, you know, the defensive counting stats for Carter Bryant were better, but it was like 0.5 blocks, stocks. right? That's a very small number for guys who didn't play a lot of minutes between the two of them. Now, I want to say, man, I really sound like a hater, but I want to say that Carter Bryant had like 3 blocks against Akron in the tournament. Like, that definitely boosts. And again, I'm not saying he's not a good defender. I just don't know if he's a top 10 pick for me. And like, yeah, so in pick and roll, I got my numbers up. Carter Bryant, defender shot 44% against him. They shot 32% against Drake Powell. And Drake Powell played out of position. Mm-hmm. He played the 4. Now, I guess the appeal is that Bryant is naturally stronger. I think he should be able to guard 2, 3, and 4, whereas Drake Powell probably can guard 1 through 3. Where you put that value at, I guess that's in the eye of the beholder. I just don't think there's a huge gap between the two is what I'm saying.
I'm with you because I feel like a lot of the Carter Bryant talk, I was looking through the stats, so I think he took more than 9 shots like once all year.
And he shot 10 against Duke, and he was like 2 for 10.
Yeah, and that was probably the most shots he took all season. So I'm kind of confused about the hype, especially with the 3-point shooting. He doesn't like he shoots it at I forgot what clip, but it's low volume. Like he's shooting 2.8 threes a game.
And his high school volume was like 27% in high school from 3. So. And like you again, the numbers say on jump shots, he shot 38%, which is good, but so did Drake Powell.
Yeah.
You know, like off the catch, Drake Powell shot 40%. And you got to think, UNC was like in shambles all year. Like they were playing.
That was terrible basketball.
They started a 6-foot point guard, RJ Davis was old.
Yeah.
You know, they had no center.
Yeah.
Their center was 6'8". Like they were in shambles. Oh, he had to play the 4.
Yeah.
So like, I just don't think there is a huge gap. And then like, to sum it all up, like if you watch their high school EYBL, Drake Powell can hoop. And this is just my personal thing. There's can you hoop and can you play basketball, right? Can you hoop is when everything falls apart, can you go do something? I don't know if Carter Bryant can hoop. And my thinking is, as a top 10 pick, can you hoop? Now, guys learn how to hoop. Perfect example, your former Toronto Raptor, OG Anunoby, he learned how to hoop. He averaged 18 this last year. He had to, though, because guess what? Okay, we figured out you can shoot. Now we got to chase you off the line, you know? Or there's 5 seconds left. You can't keep throwing these grenades back to these point guards. Like, you got to create something. I don't know if Carter Bryant, he is almost to me like an in-theory guy. Like, in theory, it works, you know? Like, Patrick Williams is an in-theory guy where the measurements are good. You know, I see this, I see that. Maybe we can do something. So that's why I'm lower on him. I probably am one of the few people, but again, to Carter Bryant's people, maybe he got Canadian people. I hope he makes all the money in the world. I'm not trying to hate. I just got questions, man.
I was going to say, Drake Powell people got to hire you, man.
Man, hey, man. I put my number at the end of this podcast. Maybe make it work.
I want to move over to some of the Canadians now in the draft. We kind of talked about last question just about the Raptors. Do you expect them to go for like a swing for upside or like for more of a ready NBA player?
I think their timeline is fake. You should go for upside. You should still go for upside because the East is wide open. If everybody is healthy, you should still be in the mix for a play-in. But you could also, I think, get a young guy opportunity to, you know, get meaningful minutes on the spot. Health is going to be their main issue. And shooting. They weren't a good shooting team last year. You got one guy who you start who were like, you know what, absolutely chase him off the line, which is probably Quickly, right? But how many games did Quickly and Scottie Barnes play together?
Not many.
How many games? You know, you got nothing from Ingram. So there's going to be a learning curve. It's just I still think you should draft for development. That's not necessarily, win now. Because even the win now guys are wings. You know, Nick Clifford is 23.
Yep.
Cedric Coward is older, you know? So it's like you still have a logjam of wings. I'd rather just go with the toolsy guy who could play the 4 in Asenge. Or I'd just go with a 5, and then we have our, you know, replacement for Jakob Poeltl if you don't trade him right away. I go with Malawach there. So I still think you can get a young guy, develop him, and still win.
Yeah. And who do you have mocked to go to the Raptors?
Right now, I had Asenge going number 9.
Senga.
Toronto, yeah. All and right. That wasn't because you messaged me. Like, I've had him there for a while, yeah. So.
Dope. Okay. Let's talk about Canadians. Will Riley, Ryan Nemhard. Let's start with Will. Just got the green room invite. Somebody I've been following for quite a while. I feel like one of the best, like, maybe scorers we've seen coming out of Canada, recent memory. But I feel like he had kind of like an up and down season at Illinois. Started off really hot. Most points scored by a freshman. 30. Big game to start off. And then had a shooting slump, I think, from like December on until January. And then had a really good end to his college season. What were your thoughts just on Will's college season at Illinois?
I was first introduced to, not even personally, but the player Will Riley at Basketball Without Borders last year.
Yeah.
I said, oh, man, they got this Canadian kid, man. He's a bucket. And he was good. He shot the ball well. I think ultimately he might be more of a scorer than a shooter in a sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to explain. A shooter is, if I play 5 minutes and I get two shots up, you expect me to make, shots. Whereas a scorer may need a rhythm for the ball to go in. But also a scorer is more than just standing there and shooting jumpers or even just shooting jumpers in general. So him, Will Riley, getting a green room invite was kind of surprising to me considering like the season that he had. Again, he came in with the reputation as a shooter. I believe he shot like 32%, maybe sub 40% from the field. But he also showed me that he can do more than just shoot. So he ran some pick and roll, showed good playmaking too. My brother's real tapped in, my brother Raphael, he's real tapped in, and he said that Will Riley is destroying people in workouts.
Yep,
I've been hearing that. That's more important to some people. And if he's destroying people, it means he's scoring, not just shooting the basketball. You know what I'm saying? Not just he's creating shots for himself is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So initially I was surprised that he got a green room invite. But at the same time, he's got good size. I do think he'll be a better shooter. My biggest concern is just the frame. He's a skinny dude and he's got like a skinny frame, but if you play strong, I think, that's more important to me. Like we talked about, like all that muscle for nothing, playing strong. And he does that. So I think he's going to be fine. It'll be interesting where he goes. I have him in my late 20s just because the jump shot is, I wish he was a better shooter. And it looks like the numbers, even from high school, say that he might just be an average shooter instead of like a knockdown shooter.
Yeah.
At least right now.
Yeah. Will's an interesting case. I think too, the green room invite from what I'm hearing is like a lot of teams in the late lotteries, maybe from 11 till mid 20s are all interested. So I think that's where it's like a lot of teams really like the upside, the positional size. I think that's the word I've heard a lot. A lot of teams just believe that. And skinny. He's very skinny. I think he's like 189 at the combine. But he gained a lot of pounds at Illinois. And from what I've been hearing, I think he's putting on like he's eating like 6,000. He's having like 6,000 calories a day. So like he's a hard worker from what I know, just from people that I know that are really close to him. And I'm not surprised he's killing guys in workouts because I do think like he's a guy that the way he was played at Illinois wasn't really suitable to his style of play. I think there's some hidden playmaking, but Illinois kind of had him more of like this off ball kind of guy that sometimes would run the pick and roll. I think him and Thomas Love had some really good chemistry going on. And I think that's kind of like, he was kind of adjusting to that role. But I think he kind of showed like at the end of the season that he could play that off ball role in certain situations. So, but I do think like he's maybe in these workouts, I think he's probably showing more of like this on ball role that he could be this facilitator and make decisions off the pick and roll and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what I've been hearing, kind of what I know just about Will in general and you play, I think he had like a crazy game in Indiana where he had like 45 points against Durant.
He can light it up. Even if he's more of a scorer than a shooter, at 6'8", you'll absolutely take that.
Yeah. NBA comparison you have? Anybody? I've heard everything. I'm like, I don't see it. Someone said Keyshawn George earlier in the year. That's another Swiss Canadian guy that I follow really closely.
Keyshawn is more of a toolsy guy.
Yeah, more of a passer. I feel like, yeah. So Keyshawn, I feel like he's still starting to add that scoring back to his plate. But any comparisons you see for Will?
Put me on the spot. I can't think of one off the top of my head. I'll think about it as we keep going. But yeah. I don't know, man.
He's tough. I feel like he's a unicorn, honestly. Like, I haven't really seen a player like him. We'll come back to it. We don't have to talk about it now. But what's his upside to you when you look at Will? He's growing, too. I think he's going to end up being like 6'10". He ended up being like 6'9", barefoot at the combine.
Interesting.
So I think teams are seeing that, and they're like, oh, my God.
Maybe it's not a good comparison. Mm-hmm. You remember Kevin Martin?
Yeah.
Kevin Martin was just, you run a play for him, and if he got to his spot, it was going to go in.
Yeah.
And then he offered just enough playmaking to keep you honest. But at the same time, Kevin Martin was one of the OG free throw merchants.
Yeah.
So maybe not Kevin Martin, but at the same time, like that same frame. I believe Kevin Martin was, 6'5", 180. And, you know, he averaged 25 quite a few times. So maybe that's the kind of scorer that he is. But I think if he does fall to the 20s, like I have him going to Boston because Boston, I feel like, needs, you know, wings with, you know, Tatum going down. And then some of the wings that they've drafted, you know, obviously they've been playing they've been making deep playoff runs. So there hasn't been minutes, but now there are minutes. And they're going to have to get some guys, you know, under the cap. I think Boston would be a good situation for him because he would be able to do more than just stand in the corner and shoot. You could see him, you know, as a scorer who could, you know, make some plays as well. So, but he's somebody that is my affinity for him has been like his shooting. It's been up and down.
Yeah.
You know, but I do see success for him, though.
Yeah. I do think like the shooting could come. To me, like, I'm more impressed because, like, the fact that you can score off the dribble, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, the standstill, catch and shoot stuff, I'm like, that can be lab work, right, where you're just repetition, like, being in the gym, that kind of stuff. So that's what makes me kind of hopeful to honestly say, like, he could be one of, like, the next great Canadian players that we've seen in recent memory. I'm honestly kind of biased too because it's Canadian, you know, like this is a Canadian basketball show. So that's a little biased for me, but I could see it. Obviously, you named Boston. Any other teams that you could see him kind of fitting well with where I know Brooklyn has a bunch of picks. I doubt they keep all those picks in the first round. But, yeah, I feel like a place where he can just go work on his game and any other spots that you see maybe that could fit for Will that kind of need that type of score and that will give him time to develop?
So stay away from Oklahoma City.
Yeah. And he's going to be stuck there, man. I hope that team does not even look at him because it'll be hard to crack minutes on that team.
But you know what? At 21 at Utah, I think that'd be a good spot for him. Okay. Because, you know, who knows what they're going to do with Lauri Markkanen's situation. You hear they're trying to trade John Collins. And if I'm a wing and I see all I got ahead of me is Cody Williams, I'm like, I'll take that challenge, you know, because he didn't have a good season last year. So, and you can, you know, you have freedom. So Utah looks nice. The Pacers just traded out to, who they trade that pick to? New Orleans?
New Orleans, yeah.
So maybe that's a package for something else going on, but I think he has. I wouldn't be mad at him in Miami, to be honest with you.
Yeah, especially putting him through the system where to put on the muscle, all that kind of stuff. I think Miami would be a good landing spot. You mentioned Utah. Ace doesn't want it. Will, man, go get buckets over there.
Man, look, man, that's the team you when you create a player on 2K and then like, I'm gonna get all these shots out here.
Yeah.
Right.
Moving on from Will, Ryan Nemhard. I feel like his buzz has started to grow since like the combine. Played really well there. I know you watched him in person. You have him, I believe, 42 on your big board. I feel like that's probably the highest I've seen, honestly. What makes him a second round pick in your eyes?
It's just purely size. Like, he isn't a big guy, but, and you know, the NBA will, or people will tell you the NBA is trending away from smaller guards, but, you know, TJ McConnell was out there hooping. And he shoots, you know, his shot chart is all inside the paint for the most part.
Yeah.
I think Ryan is just, he's like an 8-year pro. You know, like, he can pass, he can make plays, he can steady your second unit. And you know, you need that. There's always, like, shout out to Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle is the small guard whisperer from his days in Dallas. Like, you know, JJ Barea got paid. Like, he figures it out. And I feel like, you know, in the right situation, I think he could be a high level backup point guard. And if you're a team that's, you know, you need playmaking in your second unit, especially a team with depth, because, you know, the league is kind of getting away from that super sixth man role. But a team with depth, like, what more could you ask for? So I'm buying. I thought he played extremely well. Like I said, size is going to be his biggest issue. But at the same time, like, I mean, look at Scottie Pippen Jr. He started when he started in the playoffs, even when before Ja went down, like, he was starting games. And, you know, he knows his role. He picks up full court. He runs the offense. Like, there's room for guys like that. And then realistically, like, I got him going to Sacramento. Like, he might start for Sacramento. They don't have a point guard.
Hey, that'd be a good fit.
Like, he could legit start from day one.
Yeah.
And get all the reps because they don't have a point guard right now. And especially if they do what they should do, which is blow the team up. Like, that's ample opportunity right there. So.
Yeah, Ryan led the NCAA, in assists, 9.8 this past year. And I definitely think he's a second round pick. I think a team that just needs a guy that knows how to make the right reads.
We would take him in Dallas. He just let me know, and I pick him up from the airport because we don't have a point guard at all.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like on a team where, like, you know, if Kyrie's out and for some time, shout out to Spencer Dinwiddie, but he's trying to score. But we don't need him to score when we got Anthony Davis. I don't need Anthony Davis dribbling the ball up the court. That's too many miles on him.
Yeah.
So I think Dallas, you know, they're trying to trade up to get into the first round on top of the first pick that they have. But, you know, if they end up landing in the second round and he's there, I think they would take him. Because, like I said, need a point guard, need somebody on the cheap deal, and the situation may work out for him.
Yeah, from what I know, I think he's working out for about like 15, 17 teams in this draft cycle. So he's going through it all, traveling city to city, journeyman. And I don't know, I talked to somebody and he was telling me like he could have been better than Nemhard, Andrew, if he had the size. If he had the size, that's the biggest thing, right? But outside of just size, I think he's, if you're just excluding that, I think he's the best playmaker in this draft. But yeah, and I think if you're watching Andrew and these playoffs, and then you were at the combine and you're watching Ryan, very similar, just the mannerisms they move, and I think a team might be like, hey, we messed up. Like, Andrew Nemhard probably goes top 10 in that draft in 2022. That, and now you're like, you got another one in Ryan, and you're like, do I want to look dumb again? Passing up on this guy in the second round if he's available to me late in the second round. So, but I'm asking, you mentioned a bunch of teams. Do you feel like there's a place for him in the NBA despite being like 6 foot, exactly 6 foot, I think?
I do think there's a place for him. And it's like I said, it gets tricky in the playoffs the deeper you go. Obviously, if you run into an Oklahoma City, like, they play big guards. But at the same time, and I, you know, when I have these discussions with people or, you know, my brother, like, Mike Conley starts for Minnesota. And he's like 38. He's definitely not the athlete that he was. And really, Mike Conley's biggest, I guess you could say, flaw right now is that he just can't shoot the ball like he used to. I mean, he still defends. Like, when you're a small guard, you got to be a heady defender. You got to be scrappy. You got to know when to foul. You got to understand they're going to let you get away with some hacking out there, and you just got to take advantage of it. I mean, you got, again, talking to Canada, Kyle Lowry, 6 foot,
yeah.
You know? So I don't – the small guard isn't a dinosaur, you know? You just got to be able to play the game within the rules that they allow you to play. You got to go out there and, you know, put on – you got to go out there and be physical. You got to pick up full court. Like, I feel like he's going to be fine. Yeah. And, again, when you do a redraft, it's like, oh, shoot. This guy played 8 years in the NBA. He played 10 years in the NBA at 6 foot.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like you mentioned, Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Jamal Shedd just now, obviously smaller guys. So the Raptors have done it. The Raptors also, from what I know, they worked out Ryan Nembhard not too long ago. Another guy they've also worked out. I wanted to get your thoughts on, if I don't know if you've watched him much, Jameel Telfer, Butler guy, kind of been, I feel like, a fringe NBA guy. Played all 5 years there. What do you know about him? Have you watched him at Butler? But he's also kind of like built like a Luke Dort, if you see the size on him.
I didn't want to go with Canadian on Canadian, but yeah. He's built like Luke Dort or even Dylan Brooks. He's 6'7".
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at Dylan Brooks, again, I'm sure you know, but Dylan Brooks was a scorer at Oregon. And now he's a villain. And he's accepted his role, but, like, that's what he is. He plays tough defense, and he has enough scoring to where, you know, you just can't – I mean, outside of that 1 year in Memphis where he was talking to LeBron, and then, like, he didn't lean into his villainry, if that's the word. He didn't lean into it like he should have, and it got in his head, and he was missing shots. But, like, he plays hard. He defends. I feel like that's what Jameel Telford's role – he should – copy that exact blueprint. He's probably going to get a two-way guy. He's going to get a summer league invite, guard somebody full court. He shot, what, 40% on catch and shoot jumpers, I believe, this last year. So he can shoot the ball. Guard somebody full court, you know? Like, that's where these guys, the fringe guys, you got to make your chops on defense and making shots. And then from there, you know, you find yourself in a situation where you're playing minutes.
Yeah. My guy, James, I can't thank you enough for jumping on, going through the Canadians, going through the Raptors options at number 9. My guy, I want to ask you, you got a draft night suit? Are you wearing a suit? What that look like? What you going to be wearing?
I don't know. I got to go shopping, man.
You got shopping?
T-shirts.
Yeah.
I wear t-shirts every day.
I wore a suit last time, so I'm like, I might do it again.
So tell me about that. You wore a suit, like?
I wear a suit, man. Just because I don't know what it was. I was like, you know what? Let me... I've been hearing everyone's wearing suits, so I want to look the part with all these prospects looking fly. I want to feel like I'm getting drafted too, you know?
See, the problem is, man, I haven't worn a suit in a very long time. Hey. And I'm definitely a sneaker dude, so.
Yeah.
But I don't want to wear like those, like, you know, I wear a suit with sneakers, guys. Like, I want to wear my Jordan 3s or something, okay. So I don't know. And then, like, I got to get a suit that fits.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to do within the next couple of days.
So you got. You might have some time. Maybe it's too late, but anyway, I feel like you'll probably bring some like turtleneck or something like.
Yeah, you know, shirt. I do got a turtleneck.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that, man. You put me on the spot. Now I gotta go get a
shirt. Nah. My guy, can't thank you enough. This was fun. Appreciate you and just the insight. Like I said, I listen to you guys all the time, man. Like when I tell you, like, if you go through my whole Spotify, you're gonna be like, this brother is. Like every episode, man. So when I followed you on Twitter, I'm like, I got to tap into this guy, and I'm excited just to have you on and be able to get your expertise and your knowledge on a lot of these prospects. So appreciate
you for having me on. I want to come back because, you know, you guys got something cooking. I seen the young boy out there on the grainy Twitter footage that's supposed to be the machine.
Yeah.
Shoot, y'all got a guy, Jordan Charles. Man, I really like his game, man.
Watching my basketball on borders, yeah.
Man, he was like, quiet as his camera, he was probably the second best player there.
Yeah.
And who else? TJ Wall, bucket getter. Size, like, I think he just took a lot of bad shots, but he hit a lot of shots. Like, he was one of those guys. promised in the land, do another guy. Some Canadian talent coming up, man. Jordan Charles just now about to, we'll see if he makes the final rosters for the FIBA U19 World Cup. He's going to be out there in Switzerland. So I was just recently at the camp just watching, doing some stuff there. So that will actually be the next podcast previewing the FIBA U19 World Cup on Canada. So James, where can people find you if they want to tap in and
see how Jeff's on up? Twitter, it'll always be Twitter to me, but it's at Draft Junkie James. You add me, I probably respond because I enjoy talking basketball with people. It doesn't feel like work, so just talking the game. So
tap in with my guy James at Draft Junkie James on Twitter, and tap into NBA Big Board, man. That's the podcast I listen to for draft stuff. They do top tier content. And yeah, my guy James, thank you so much. This has been the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. It's been my boy James and me. We out.